Welcome to the Empowerista interview series on business rock stars. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Danica Breisha, founder and CEO of Model Meals, but so much more. You have so many titles. We're going to get into all of it. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So we were just talking before we were officially starting that you do all the things. So give us an overview of everything going on in your life right now.
Yeah. It's funny because I feel like we're in this sort of cultural time where people are juggling like a million different things. And I'm kind of curious as to how that's going to translate, but I'm hoping it's positively. It has so far. So I started as a plus size model about 9 years ago. So I'm with IMG Models and I model for brands like Target and Old Navy and all that. So I do that and I'm really proud of that because I struggled a lot with food and body as a kid and my own self-worth. And so I feel like I get to be the girl in the magazines that I didn't get to see growing up. So that's a really important component for me, especially around like body image and empowerment. And then I own a meal delivery business called Model Meals. So I'm the founder and CEO there. I started my meal delivery business because I changed how I ate. I did something called the Whole 30 mm-hmm. and it changed my life so dramatically. The way my brain functioned, I had no idea I could feel that great. And more than that, I just had no idea that I could have that much mental clarity. And what I noticed, it became sort of a spiritual experience because I started getting clarity on how I felt in certain situations and on my relationship with food and my body and myself. And I saw that when I ate this way and I took care of myself and I practiced self-care, I was a kinder person. I put a more light-filled person into the world. Like at Starbucks, I was more engaged. I was mm-hmm. listening. And I really remember thinking, what food can change the world? If people had nutrient-dense food and felt really good, food can change the world. And how can I make it easier for people to eat this way? And so that was how Model Meals was born.
How much of a hand do you have in your Model Meals social media?
So we have a marketing person now. I ran the social media for the first year and a half, mm-hmm. I would say, as we started the business. And then as it grew, we brought someone on to sort of help with that. So I oversee things, but I have the best team. They're so good. They get the vision. They understand. So I would say the thing that I'm constantly saying in those meetings is human, 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 human. Like I really want to tell human stories. I don't want it to be such like salesy. I want our page to be a place where people can learn. Our slogan is modeling how to live and eat cleaner. It's all about education. It's Model Meals. So it's for me, it's how do I share recipes? How do I make this? If someone can't afford our meals, how can we give them a way to experience the benefits in a way that's more accessible to them? Or how can I tell the story of someone who's changed how they ate and it's changed their life? So for me, it's not so much, here's our business, buy our meals. It's much more about—
That never works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's about how do I tell stories that hopefully spark light in other people.
Take me back to that time where you knew it was time to grow your team so you so they could be more hands-on. You could be, you obviously still be the visionary, be the CEO, mm-hmm. absolutely, but you didn't have to be so in the weeds day-to-day stuff.
So you know, the tricky thing with that is you have to get to a point where the business makes enough money to pay the person, right?
Yeah.
So it was very slowly that, you know, it started as founders and then we hired our first chef. And it was like, oh my gosh, we have an employee, right? And it just trickled like that. And then when I went to leave on tour, we hired an operations director who sort of stepped in to run the show when I left. And I came back and I realized he was so much better at that job than I was, you know? And so that's one of my biggest pieces of advice is to hire people who are smarter than you. And I really believe that there's this sort of myth of hard work and hustle and not sleeping and being miserable that just isn't true. I think you can build a life and a business exactly how you want to build it. So people might look at it and look at how I run my business and say, well, she's not there all the time and she's traveling and whatever, but they don't understand that I can be a part of that remotely sometimes. And I can be in the kitchen a few mm-hmm. times a week like I am and be with the team. And it's just this perfect balance. And self-care comes right back into that. Because for me, if I take an hour or 2 hours every day and practice self-care, then I serve my team so much better, mm-hmm. right? So for mm-hmm. me, I'm about quality over quantity. I don't care. I'm not tracking people's hours and sitting over their shoulder and having my employees just be there to be there. If you get your work done, fine, leave. I don't want you to miss your kids' thing. I don't want you to miss holidays or special occasions. I'd like to take that culture that I've built for myself and that I desire for myself and put it into my business as well. So
it takes a tremendous amount of trust
Yeah.
So tell me about that. Like, how have you come to a point where you not only trust your employees, I'm sure you hire amazing employees, but really like trust yourself to run this business and sometimes at a distance?
Yeah. I mean, I think it hasn't been perfect. We haven't always hired the absolutely, you know, absolute perfect people, of course. But I think people, you know, the self care and the self work that I do allows me to really tap in and allows me to be super intuitive. So I, you know, people will say, leave your feelings behind, don't bring them to work. But I feel the absolute opposite. I show up and I really feel into it. So when I'm interviewing, I feel someone's energy. When I get to, you know, someone's character, you know. And so for me, that's just been a really big part of the hiring process. And I'm not always right. And I'm always also not always the person hiring people. Mm-hmm. So I just try to tap into that. But I think that we provide a really loving culture. I also have really adopted the idea that not everyone's going to be with us forever, and that's okay. I learned something from my operations director. He said, let's build this business in a way and provide an environment where they leave Model Meals and they say, I really grew in that position. I really learned a lot, and I'm taking that with me to the next job or the next thing.
It sounds like you just have an attitude of service all around. Service of your customers, service of your employees. You've just built a beautiful business and really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing your journey.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. This has been the Empowerista Interview Series. I'm Alex Worley, and we'll see you next time.
One step away from homelessness being that paycheck. I was just one paycheck away. So when I got there on Friday, no paycheck. There was probably another 14 people standing outside the front door who had the same conversation I had with my boss. He had skipped town, gone. And I called my landlord and said, I can't pay rent. This is what happened. He said, I already gave you 30 days. I can't give you another. And that was literally, you know, day one of going into homelessness. I was in Las Vegas. I was on the streets. I didn't have a couch to sleep on or friends. I had a couch at the time. I didn't have a car. My car got repoed, so I couldn't sleep in my car. I literally slept in abandoned buildings and basically ate wherever I could find food, which included, you know, dumpsters and garbage cans. My mom was like my ace in the hole. Yeah, I expected her to say what like most moms would say, which was, you know, don't worry about it. We'll buy you a plane ticket back to Jersey. You can sleep in your old bedroom. I'll make you a cup of soup, whatever, right? And she didn't say those things. Instead, she said, why don't you just go find a shelter? And very next call was to Eric, which was my last boss, my boss from years prior to. And he essentially said, I have this office space, and this office space is very tiny. I was thinking about starting a new business, but I'm not doing it now. The best thing about this office space, because it was so tiny, was that all the utilities were included. So I had electricity, but what was really cool is I had this really, really old desktop computer on a table that's like 8 foot, 6 foot table that had internet access because utilities were included. So I took this opportunity to spend 24 hours a day online, creating a resume, submitting it to a job application, being on Craigslist all day long, being on Monster all day long. And there was a lot of rejection, a ton of rejection. And it was all based on surface level. It was based on how I looked. When I'd walk in and people saw me, obviously I looked homeless. When I walked into the lobby, they'd come running out from behind the receptionist desk and go, hey, you can't come in here. And I'd be like, but I'm here for the job. Sure you are, you can't come in here. I forgave her for everything, basically. And what I look back on it now, just knowing that she had to do exactly what she had to do for me at that time. And today what I do is I extend that opportunity to others who are in the exact same position that I was 3 years ago.
I would say before you start an app, find a technical co-founder right away. Find someone who's super passionate, acknowledge what you're good at and what you're bad at. Do some research, but not too much. I kind of like to compare it to when you're sick and you start to Google things. Well, then you start to look at everything that's going on and you think you're dying all of a sudden. Make sure that you have a shot in the market. The next thing you should probably do once you find that engineer and you've done your research, build the most minimal viable product, put it out to market. It's okay if it's not perfect. And if it is ready, then you've probably wasted your time. It's always redoing it and redoing it and redoing it until the point where your customers are satisfied with it.
The number one factor that will influence your success in your business is the environment that you put yourself in, the people you surround yourself with. Let me give you an example. If I asked you to write down a list of the five people that you spend the most time with, and then write down next to each one of them what you think they earn. Add it up, divide by five, that is exactly what you earn. You earn nothing more, nothing less than the average of the five people that you spend most of your time with. And you can apply this lesson to virtually any area of your life. So if you wanna build a $1 million business, here's what you need to do. Make sure those five people have built $1 million companies. If you wanna build a $10 million business, what you need to do is surround yourself with people that have accomplished that goal, because the people who've only gotten up to a million won't know how to reach to a much bigger business.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is our CEO roundtable segment, and joining us right now, we have two amazing entrepreneurs and CEOs. Tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me. My name is Nancy Soni. I'm the CEO of Filled. We are a technology recruiting firm. We specifically work with tech startups around the country to help them scale engineering, product, and marketing teams.
Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks.
I'm Enon, CEO and founder of Albert. Albert gives simple financial advice and lets you take action right from the app.
I love it. So you have a background in recruiting. I think that that's maybe the best place to get started is so many people nowadays have to look for great talent, but more importantly, be able to retain it. I think that there's a plethora of great talent out there. Some people may not agree with that. I think there's 7 billion people on the planet. There's a lot of talented people out there. The tough thing is getting them on your team and getting them to actually stay, because in addition to having so much talent, there's so many opportunities out there. So let's dive in with you. What is the key to finding that great talent and actually retaining it?
I think it really starts with having a really strong understanding of what your culture is. Don't try to be anybody else but yourself and really get a sense for that first. And then figure out, you know, for either utilizing a recruiting firm or actually even starting the recruiting process, get a really strong sense for what does your team look like, what do you want it to look like, and then where are the holes that you want to plug in. And then actually develop the process. Who are you trying to attract and how do you actually attract them? Constantly thinking about what you're selling to the potential person who likely is employed and what's the story. And
where do you find most of the talent? I mean, you've been in this space for over 17 years, so where is most of the talent? I know that it deviates depending on the industry and the type of people, but is there specific types of places that you look for great talent?
Well, currently the talent is all employed. So much of what you should be doing as an entrepreneur is constantly getting out there, networking, talking to people, recruit from your own employees, meaning where are they coming from, who do they know, start there first, and then if you're utilizing recruiting firms, all we do is reach out to people on a regular daily basis.
Okay, so. Well, I know he said he was looking for an engineer, so you'll probably go to
yeah, we're gonna,
yeah, we'll talk after this.
We're going to have a great conversation afterwards. You know, I think for me, I think one of the toughest things about the recruiting process is how time-consuming it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just going through my own LinkedIn network and reaching out to people and then one degree out is an amazingly time-consuming process that while you have to do it, takes you away from the rest of your business. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the struggle for the small company, small business.
Well, I both deal with that on a daily basis with clients and then also actually have had to scale my own business. And I will say it is something that I live and breathe on a daily basis, both from a perspective of helping clients kind of figure out how to allocate the right amount of time. But I think the first 10 to 20 hires that you make at a company are probably the most crucial because they set the dynamic, they set the tone. And if you get that wrong, you end up spending more time dealing with the problems.
So what are some of the things you wish you knew when you started out?
I would say that the number one thing that I wish I was fully self-aware of, it's very difficult ultimately to understand this, but is to know it's going to take time. And yes, you knew it was going to take time, but it takes, you know, the old adage of 10,000 hours, or it takes 10,000 hours to be good at something. If you're working 15 hours a day, that's roughly over 3 years, right? And so knowing full well that those 3 years need to play out for you to be on a level playing field with the rest of the entrepreneurs and small businesses out there that you're aspiring to be like and competing with, is a very difficult thing, I think, to know from the get-go. But if you know that through the process, I think you beat yourself up a little bit less at the different milestones and have a more reasonable expectation of what to do at any given time and where to go now and into the future. So it's really that self-awareness around how much time it takes. It's not even just the effort. Everybody's going to put in that effort, right? If you're in it, you're in it. Here for the work, but it just takes time.
So we were talking about the things you wish you knew when you got started as an entrepreneur. Nancy, you're the one. You're up.
Okay. So I bootstrapped my business. So we are not a venture-funded startup. And one of the things that I probably learned the most in the last, we're heading into our fourth year, is financial management, really being thoughtful of how I kind of spent our revenue and really thoughtful of how I actually hired, because for us, every single employee, every single recruiter is a salesperson. They're revenue generating. And so how long to keep an employee that isn't necessarily working out. I think I made the mistake of hiring fast and firing slow. And, you know, you hear the startup advice, and I didn't necessarily heed it. So
what was one of the biggest mistakes or failures you had? Could be any time. Could be before you became an entrepreneur. Could be in the beginning stages. Could be just last week or yesterday. What was the big mistake or failure you had? But more importantly, what was the lesson that you learned from it?
I will say just lessons that I learned being a better boss, really understanding how to manage people that are in different places in their lives, and really understanding what motivates them and how to get the best out of them. And understanding that there's really little that you as a human being can do to change another person. So that makes hiring even more important. It's hard to motivate someone who isn't already internally motivated. Yeah. And therefore, looking for grit in individuals tends to be something that we tend to focus.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I mean, my personal bias out there is that the talent pool, you alluded to it, is huge. And I think the dispersion amongst talent is a lot tighter than people make it out to be. I don't think, you know, people always talk about that rock star engineer. Sure, there are wizards out there, but the difference made by the extra, perhaps not so measurable IQ, who even knows how you measure that, it, to me, is minute versus the difference made by somebody who's there just for the work and is totally gung-ho about what you're doing. And if you can find that, I think we are at times... We are at times as people swayed by pedigree and by, somebody comes in and said they were, you know, this guy was the top engineer at, you know, Twitter or whatever. You know, he built this amazing search algorithm. At the end of the day, if he doesn't or she doesn't care about what you're doing or cares 75% about what you're doing, they are going to perform far worse than somebody with a fraction of their talent, so to speak.
So the key is making sure that you've got everybody in alignment with the vision, the purpose, and everything the company values.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, not everybody necessarily sees the same way the company does, right? Mm-hmm. Some people may not value, in our case, you know, simple financial planning. It may just be boring to some people, and if that's the case, that's totally fine. Because again, this isn't the sexiest topic out there, let's be honest, right? But some people really find it interesting. Some people really think that they can make a difference in it, and those are the people, talent aside, that can actually drive us forward a lot faster.
Appreciate you guys for coming on the show and sharing some of yours with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks
for
having us.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Career burnouts affect everyone. Follow these short tips to help you stay focused at work and not flame out by the end of the year. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Step one, change your work environment. If you can, try working from a different place. If the weather is nice, find a spot outside, or maybe spend a day working from a coffee shop, maybe a library. Sometimes a simple change in scenery can be refreshing enough to help you recover from burnout. Step two, get an outside opinion. Sometimes you're too deep in your problems to be able to see a way out. An outside influence, whether it's a trusted friend, counselor, or family member, can be instrumental to helping you fashion a healthy plan to move forward. Step three, don't give up. The thing about battling burnout is that everybody's different. What worked for somebody else might not work for you, but the bottom line is don't give up. There is a healthy, manageable, productive life available to you. Just might take some time to find it. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
This is Business Rockstars.
Welcome to Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. You've probably heard of the Men's Warehouse, and if so, you'll know of our guest today. We guarantee it. It hasn't exactly been a seamless road for George Zimmer the past few years. He founded Men's Warehouse, built it into a multi-billion dollar empire, then was fired by the board 3 years ago. But now he has two more companies and a payback plan. George Zimmer, welcome. Your story could make a novel or even a really great movie.
Well, thank you. I'm working on the novel, and I'm writing it so it can be adopted for film.
Are you serious?
I am.
Oh, my gosh, I was only joking. I'm onto something here. What are you up to these days?
Well, I'm building a new company called Generation Tux, which is simply leveraging something that I know a bit about, which is tuxedos and suits, only this time, instead of trying to sell them, I'm renting them.
Online?
Online. All online. And been doing it for about 6 months. And
how is it going?
It's going well enough that I can smile and say this is going to be bigger than men's.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, why tuxedos? How can just tuxedos be bigger than Men's Warehouse?
Well, it's tuxedos and suits.
And suits, okay.
And 40% of our business right now is in suits. So it's tuxedos and suits. We sold millions of tuxedos and suits at Men's Warehouse. And in fact, Men's still rents 3.5 million tuxedos a year.
Interesting.
So a good market
there for you, a good target. It's so weird sitting across from you and hearing that voice. My gosh, you sound just like how you sound on TV in those commercials. But I have to ask you about this, about being ousted from the Men's Warehouse.
Yes.
Because it was so public. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was. It's been 3 years, so it's certainly not painful anymore.
But I would imagine in the beginning it was very painful.
Well, you know, the further you get away from something, the more confused you get between actual memory and imagination, which are right next to each other in the brain. So I hope what I'm telling you is what actually happened. But for all I know, it's just my imagination. They wanted me to remain as a figurehead. And I just wasn't that type of guy. I felt I was still the leader of the organization. And so when I said I didn't want to do that, they just fired me, told me they'd put my furniture in storage and to turn in my phone and computer and hit the road. And so I got home.
This is the company that you had spent most of your life building.
I founded the company in 1973. So I got home that night, and I knew it was coming 24 hours ahead. So my family, sitting at dinner that night, nobody wanted to talk to Dad because he had just been fired. Nobody knew what to say. So I said, hey, kids, everybody gets knocked down in life, even your dad. And the mark of a man is not how often or how you get knocked down, but how you get up. And although I haven't figured it out yet, I'm going to get up. I'm not going to retire. And that was the message.
Although your good friend Mark Benioff, CEO of Salesforce, he actually, from what I read, gave you the advice, George, retire. You've been ousted, and all this public sympathy has poured out for you. That's a great legacy to retire on.
When I went to Mark on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2014, and said, Mark, I have an idea, and it may involve Salesforce. I'd like to run it by you. And we were sitting on the beach in Hawaii in bathing suits, and I said, online tuxedo and suit rental, and a smile. He didn't even have to speak. The smile went from ear to ear, and he said, I think Salesforce can handle that.
I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. My guest today is George Zimmer, founder of the startup Generation Tux, an online platform for renting tuxedos. Mr. Zimmer was also the founder of Men's Warehouse before being fired from the company 3 years ago. And you were just talking about how Mark Benioff of Salesforce liked your tux rental online idea, but also want to ask you about how that is working out, because your background is mostly in brick and mortar stores. But this is really more of a tech company. How challenging was that for you?
Extremely challenging. And I know that people often ask successful people if they could do things over, would they do things differently? And there is something I would do differently at Generation Tux. I'm now on my third CTO.
Oh.
And I would have made a more thorough investigation and gotten a real technology partner, because Salesforce was a supplier. Mm-hmm. Although they've invested in the business, they really are more of a supplier. And I could have used a technology partner.
I want to ask you, what are the three best pieces of advice you can offer to an aspiring entrepreneur or business owner?
The number one thing is to be passionate about what you're going to do. I think too many people make up business plans based on the economics, and they're not sure if they're going to be really passionate. And when I say passionate, I mean, it's got to be the type of thing that you can do 24 hours without looking at your watch. That's the type of passion that I'm talking about. Now, beyond that, I think it is very helpful to have wealthy friends. And that was what enabled me to get this going. Because if I was trying to build a company and finance it with investors at the same time, I would find that to be somewhat of a distraction. My focus is on the product and the business, not on the
money.
But
very few people have access to the kind of wealthy people that you have access to. So then what would be your advice for them, your average entrepreneur starting out?
So you need to start younger. When I started Men's Warehouse, I had never been married, and I thought that was instrumental, because it enabled me to make creating a successful company my top priority. And I actually feel, even today, building my second act, you have to make it a top priority. If it's tied for top, you run the risk of making mistakes. And that's why I'm so enthusiastic today about what I'm doing. It's still my top priority.
Really great to see. We'll come back and talk more with George Zimmer about some of the biggest obstacles he's faced. We sort of know what one of them already is, and how he managed to scale the wall to success. Scale the Wall is powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, you can go to npm.com. I'm Tui Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
The biggest mistake entrepreneurs make is they focus on too many things at once. And I call this hammers and nails syndrome. Let's say I gave you one hammer and one nail. Your job's simple. All you have to do is take that hammer and like drive that nail into a piece of wood. Like really nail that one business. The odds are you're gonna miss the first time. You're gonna miss the second. You may miss the third, but eventually I'll bet on you. I'll bet you're gonna nail it. Let's say I give you two hammers and two nails. You have a problem. Who's gonna hold the nails? Because you have to take both hammers at the same time, bring them back and strike. And the odds are you're gonna miss the first, the second, the third time. You may never get it right. Let's say I give you 10 hammers and 10 nails. You get the point. The biggest mistake that entrepreneurs make is they focus on too many things at once. And so what I say is this, don't focus on everything, focus on one thing. Really nail it. So how do you focus on one thing? You see, most people, they try and build the most complicated, the biggest for like everything at once. So what I say is focus on the very simplest thing, that one thing. Get that into your customers' hands. Get feedback and then iterate and improve that product. And let them tell you what to build next.
Just picked everything up, had a, you know, going away party and moved to LA. And I went to the agency that I had been previously out in LA to sign with. And the person that had signed me was no longer at the agency. And there actually was no men's director for the modeling agency. They had, literally had no idea who I was. And I was kind of just, first I was depressed. I had no idea. You know, what I was gonna do, if I was gonna be able to make money. But I was definitely so embarrassed that I couldn't even bear to like tell my parents that like, I don't know, I just moved across the country and I have no idea what I'm gonna do. I was sleeping on the floor of my buddy's tiny studio with no AC in summer in Venice. It's not supposed to be easy. And it would have been doing myself and everyone who believed in me and supported me on the move a disservice to just not give everything that I possibly could. Thankfully, the person that they had hired to take over the men's agency agreed to have a meeting with me. I probably wasn't somebody that he necessarily wanted to have on his board, because he was, you know, when you come in, he was picking the people that were gonna stay on board for his agency, and he gave me a shot. Once things kind of started to piece together, it was really important for me to basically form like completely new habits and be more grateful for everything that I did have and appreciate the fact that I even had someone that would take me in. And it kind of just, it fuels to me not only how I treat people and how I treat the business, but how important it is to surround yourself with good people, but also to always, you know, lend a hand and help other people.
Can you build generational wealth? Rick Glade's joining us to talk about this subject with us. He's the founder and CEO of Infinite Success Alliance. Rick, break it down for us. This is something that you talk about, you work with ultra successful people on. Break it down for us.
Yeah, you know, I think the reality is so many people are just, you know, on the chase, right? So many people are just out there, whether you're, you know, successful or you're not successful, whether you're an employee or whether you have a small business, really people are just kind of, you know, chasing the next benchmark.
Yeah.
But the reality is, very few people actually sit down and take score and think about actually building wealth for the next generation or even the second generation. So, you know, if you look at some of the, you know, the big players in that space, you know, the Kennedys and Rockefellers and those kind of guys, I mean, they've got, you know, seven generations full of wealth. And so, you know, there's not only a strategy, but there's also a, you know, a responsibility for the next up and coming generations to be involved in that as well. So, you know, there's two parts to that. To really to make it happen. But, you know, as the patriarch or the matriarch, you know, being the foundational leader of that wealth, it really, really comes down to you, you know, knowing what the end game is in your business and then knowing what the end game is in your kind of your eulogy and where you're going to go once you're gone. And how is that next generation going to carry on whatever it is that you're building? And so it really, really takes you, you know, thinking about it and taking score.
Okay, so what about for the families out there? Because this is something that comes up all the time, is you, like me, deal with really successful people that are trying to figure this thing out, right? How do I create generational wealth or a system in a business that my kids can take over if they want? A lot of the times I find it's sort of 50-50. The kids either want to be part of the business because it's just kind of like a turnkey, here you go, here's the keys to the car kind of thing. And then there's other kids that are like against the grain. I don't want anything to do with that business, Dad. You tried to make me get in it when I was a kid growing up, but I hate it. I don't want anything to do with that. It's the last thing I want to do when I grow up. I just want to do my own thing and follow my own passion and hopefully inherit some of the wealth or the real estate or whatever it may be. So absolutely. What do you deal with in a situation like that?
That's a great point. In fact, the Rockefellers, the way they actually have almost like a council. They run their family office like a government. So, you know, again, being seven generations or whatever it is now, maybe it's even more. But the reality is they actually have where they vote, you know, and they literally vote on what somebody's going to do. So, you know, that again is part of having to put those measures in play.
Good problems to have.
Right, good problems to have. But the reality is too, is that when I work with a lot of people, don't try and put on the shoe that doesn't fit, right? So if you do have, you know, generation one or generation two, and most times you don't get involved in generation two, but at least gen one, you know, you want to make sure that you're working with the child's foundational genius. And these could be adult children at this time, right? It doesn't matter. But the point is, when I say foundational genius, I think every one of us has something in our DNA that we're really passionate about or born to do. And so I really think it takes discovery to find out what that is. And again, like, for example, I have a son. We did some testing on him for that, for his foundational genius. Says, what are you really born to do? And the reality is, he's an extremist. He wants to, you know, jump off of cliffs and skydive and do things like that. He's never going to sit in an office.
Yeah.
So if I try and force a business of real estate down his throat that says, you got to sit in this office or manage real estate or do these things, it's not going to happen, right? And it may in small doses, but it's not going to happen long term.
Yeah.
So for him, setting up some kind of trust or some type of beneficial, you know, grant or retain trust, things like that, then that's how you would set him up where he can still have the financial capacity to maybe do something that's beneficial for them under their foundational genius and move on that way.
Well, these are good problems to have, but first we have to get there. So let's talk about what that process looks like. Again, we don't have a lot of time, so we got to be concise here, but
sure. In
a nutshell, you know, quick, effective ways to build wealth so that we can have these problems, right? So what are some good ways that people can understand like the basics of investing? I mean, one of the simplest things is an old saying, it literally doesn't matter how much you make, it matters what you keep.
Absolutely.
And we've probably all seen people that you make $1 million a year and you spend 1.2, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the reality is, number one, you need to make Uncle Sam your partner. Right. So take advantage of whatever, you know, tax advantages there are out there. And like you said, if you're making $30,000 a year and you're a W-2 earner, you can take and put that kind of money into like a Roth IRA. You can put that money into, you know, some type of Roth, you know, future investment account where you can maybe take that out tax free in the future. So it's not a matter of how much you're actually making. It's actually about, like you said, how much do you actually prepare for the future and how much are you actually doing that? And then so, you know, create your financial awareness to where you're doing things like that. But there's a lot of those programs out there. Again, buying a home, you get the full interest deduction of your home.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're a renter out there, you know, you may be making a smaller income, $30,000 to $100,000 a year, but the reality is, by you renting the home, you're getting, you know, getting no benefits. You know, if you had an investment home, you could actually compound your wealth by having a tenant buy that home for you, right? You're getting all the tax benefits, you're getting all the appreciation, you're getting the equity, and the tenant is actually buying that. So if you're a tenant, you're probably buying somebody a home, right?
Yeah.
And so fast forward, if you're young, again, if you started when you're 18, started when you're 25, whatever it is, you know, you're 38 years old and the home is completely paid off. You have the free and clear asset. Here's the reality. The tenant bought it for you. You got all the tax benefits. You got all the appreciation over those years. And for 30 years, I don't know anybody that can go back and say, I'm paying the same amount of rent I am today that I was 30 years ago. Or I can say the value of my house is the same today as it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think real estate is probably one of the most tools that you can leverage. You know, there's other ways, options, stock market, investment, you know, those kind of things. But I think really take advantage of retirement accounts and real estate.
Fantastic. I think it's simple advice we've probably heard before, but again, it's taking action on it. And something that I love about investing is it doesn't matter how much you make. It's easier if you make a lot of money because then you can save more and you're kind of ahead in the game. But I mean, there's so many examples out there where it doesn't matter how much you make, it matters how much you keep, and then the ways of which you compound it. I think real estate's a great one. Rick? Pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, or online at businessrockstars.com.
How would you like to learn the secrets to engaging followers on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and LinkedIn? Become an influencer. Business Rockstars is giving you the secrets to social media, and it's free. Join us for our Social Media Startup Bootcamp, a live online event Thursday, March 2nd at 10 a.m. Pacific. Go to businessrockstars.com, learn from rockstar CEOs, including Leonard Kim, who will teach you how to become an influencer, Jennifer Puno, Instagram social media ninja, and SEO and social media guru Austin Hay. The Business Rockstars Social Media Startup Bootcamp. Find out how to engage and grow your Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and LinkedIn social footprints. Click, like, share. The Business Rockstars Social Media Startup Bootcamp, live Thursday, March 2nd at 10 a.m. Pacific. Go to businessrockstars.com and sign up now. That's businessrockstars.com.